Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
And welcome to another edition of Commodore Hour on a beautiful Monday night in Nashville. It is great to have you with us. We'll talk Vanderbilt sports over the next hour. We're going to have our weekly visit with baseball coach Tim Corbin. Barton Simmons will join us from Vanderbilt football. He's the general manager and personnel director for that program. And then later on in the hour, former Vanderbilt bowler and 2007 national champion Karen Greigel will be our guest with the documentary coming out tonight, Vandy Rolls. Looking forward to watching that on SEC Network a little bit later on this evening. As far as what else going on, baseball over the weekend had a tough weekend against Georgia. The Bulldogs came in here and won 2 out of 3. They won 14-2 on Thursday. Vanderbilt won 5-2 in a thriller on Friday night. Then the Commodores lost 9-1 on Saturday. But Vanderbilt is still 9-3 overall in the SEC, tied for first in the East Division, and 25-5 overall, and ranked number 2 in the latest rankings that came out today. Vanderbilt won that game in the middle 5-2 on Friday night. Jack Leiter was excellent. Went 7 innings, struck out 13, 1 run on 3 hits. Jack Bolger hit a game-tying home run in the 6th. And then a big 8th inning rally after the first two had been retired. Hits by Keegan and Bolger, and then the go-ahead double by C.J. Rodriguez, followed by a 3-run homer opposite field by Parker Nolan. So excellent relief work from Nick Maldonado and Luke Murphy. They pitched the 8th and 9th innings. That home run was huge, though, because Georgia came up with a solo home run in the 9th, and the 3-run homer by Nolan ended up making the difference. But Commodores get back at it this week. It will be Eastern Kentucky tomorrow night at the Hawk, and then Tennessee Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on the road over in Knoxville. They're having a terrific season as well. Both teams 9-3 going in and tied for the lead in the SEC East. Tennessee lost to Florida Sunday, but won 2 out of 3 in that series. When we come back, we will visit with Coach Tim Corbin, and that is coming up next. We remind you that Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Jeep. They are your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters, have been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. More of Commodore Hour coming up in a moment. The Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. And we are joined now by Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin. His team will play tomorrow night against Eastern Kentucky and then at Tennessee Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Coach, how are you doing this evening?
Doing good, Kevin.
I guess to go back to last weekend, if you ever need any reminder that this is a tough league, Georgia comes in with 3 wins. They look like one of the best teams in the country over the span of 3 days. Man, every weekend is so difficult in this league, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, it's like iron sharpens iron. I mean, there's a reason why so many teams come out of the league and have great success during the course of the postseason. And I think when you play these teams, they somehow exploit you. What one team does to you, maybe another team doesn't. And I think case in point was Georgia. I mean, they certainly played very well this past weekend. I you know, having seen them play a bunch on film, I didn't think they played the same way against other teams. And you know, that's sometimes how Vanderbilt looks. You know, you play well in one weekend, not so well another weekend, but teams have that, they can do that to one another. But this certainly is a team that I feel like could really have a bearing on the standings as the season progresses. I thought their pitching was outstanding, and I thought offensively they were very good too.
Yeah, I wasn't all that sad to see Connor Tate leave town. He won Player of the Week, and I thought if he didn't, there was something wrong. Man, that guy was just such a tough out the whole weekend.
He was. It's an older kid, been in the league for a while. He had to really work at it to earn playing time during his freshman, sophomore year, but now that he's been around the league 4 years, the thing that I've noticed with Connor Tate is he's a whole lot stronger. It's a very physical kid. Brother was physical too, not as physical, but still physical as a shortstop. But Connor's a right fielder, and he could run, and he could certainly hit with power as he hit 3 home runs. But really the balls he hit were all hit hard. You know, even the ones that weren't home runs, he had a couple of doubles, a couple singles. I mean, he just had a great weekend and certainly carried him a little bit. He produced a lot of runs. He had that 4 RBIs in the first game and certainly picked up several RBIs throughout the weekend.
To go back to Saturday, we saw Sam Loboke leave after only 4 hitters in the fourth. Have you found out any more about his injury, which I thought looked really scary at the time?
Well, it is scary, and no, we haven't found out anything yet, but we'll probably know something here within the next 24 hours. And anytime a pitcher goes down like that, I mean, we're privy to seeing it on the other side of LSU, but you don't want to see it happen to anyone, because when someone goes down, it's a year, and maybe a year and more time. So unfortunately, the timing for that is never good at any point in time, but certainly in Sam's case, where we're in the middle of the year and trying to make a run, and he's certainly a huge part of our pitching staff, but it's not a good thing to lose him.
How did you feel overall about Patrick Riley's first start?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I think, you know, when you're a freshman, you're out there for the first time and you make that start, it's you've got to calibrate your emotions in a lot of different ways, because no longer is he a reliever. So his catch play and his readiness for the game before is unlike anything he's ever experienced here at Vanderbilt. So I thought it was good for him to be in that position. I thought the first couple of innings were good. And I thought, you know, after the high 40s, pitch 50, I thought that's where he lost his command a little bit. And you have to build up to that. It's not an easy thing. So he'll get the opportunity again and hopefully produce a little bit better.
Going back to Friday, Game 2 was a great game. If you're just a baseball fan, it was a fun game to watch. But, you know, and we talked about this some on Saturday, just some really good at-bats in that eighth inning. Take us through, you know, what you liked. You know, the Keegan and Bulger got the hits to start the rally, then CJ's double, and then the home run by Parker.
Well, they're very responsive at that, because you're in the bottom of the eighth with 2 outs and 2 quick outs at that. Bradfield grounded out, I think, on a pitch or 2 pitches, and then Carter struck out. So it looked like, you know, we didn't have much going into that inning. And then Keegs got to 1-2. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, the at-bat looked like it was going to be a tough one. And then he gets to 2-2, and then he fouls off a couple of pitches, and pitches that were on the corners of the plate. So I thought he did a good job just to stay in the at-bat. And then when he drove the ball up the middle, it certainly started something. And then Bulger, too, being a freshman and getting to 7 pitches, 3-2 count, fouling off a pitch, and then getting to the point where he could drive a ball up the middle. Now it looks like, okay, first and second, got a chance. You know, we got a chance at least for the base hit. And CJ, as he does so many times, if you look at his weekend, I should say, just look at the counts that young man is in. He does a good job at identifying strikes and balls and got himself in a good count, and then he didn't miss the barrel and drove the ball down the line to get the go-ahead run. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Parker getting a good count too, 1-0, and then driving the ball to the left field side. And all I was concerned about was the ball going to stay fair? And it was hit hard enough where it just kind of jet-streamed out towards the left field foul pole and went out. But boy, did we need that, because, as you mentioned, we gave up the solo in the ninth inning, but to Garrett Blalock, who, by the way, had a great weekend too. We were thankful that we could finish that game as we did. I thought Luke did a good job finishing it off. And I know you already mentioned Maldonado. Maldonado was good both days. Pitched really well in relief.
Yeah, and talking about Maldonado, I mean, he went in and just filled up the strike zone as he has all season. That's really one of the key jobs of any pitcher, but especially a reliever in a close game. You just want to keep runners off base.
You want to keep runners off base and keep the game in the same position. It's the proverbial leave it better than when you left. You know, it's like that. Mm-hmm. That's really what you want out of a relief pitcher. And if you leave it better than when you left, then your team has a chance. It also can reshape the momentum. And there's a momentum swing that goes to your offense when a pitcher does a good job and sets them down quick. And we didn't get those momentum pieces on Thursday and Saturday, but we certainly did on Friday when Nick went in there and boy, did a nice job following up what was a tremendous pitching performance by Jack Leiter.
Yeah, what did you like about Leiter's performance? 13 strikeouts, 7 innings, gave up only one run. He was really good again. You know, and especially in a game where you really needed him to have that kind of performance.
Yeah, I think that's what I liked about it most, is he could feel it. You know, it reminded me, I know we talked about this on Friday before the game, but there had a Duke Game 2 super regional feel to it. And the fact that runs were, we got blown out first night and then had to come back. And in the middle of that game, you're thinking, my gosh, are we going to score a run? You know, it's like you got a major leaguer on the mound at Webb. And when you got a lefty that's a senior that's throwing 93, 94 miles an hour with a nose-to-toes breaking ball and a slider, and he's landing everything, you're thinking, are we ever going to get to on base? And, you know, when Calvin Hewitt dropped the bunt, it was almost like a breath of fresh air. But, you know, on the other side, is Leiter's just got to keep the game right where it is. He did. I thought he was fantastic. He made one mistake, and he hung a breaking ball to Riley King, who did what good hitters do when you hang a breaking ball. And it scored a guy that he actually struck out. You know, Cole Tate struck out, got on base on a wild pitch, and that run scored. So that can kind of take the air out of you, too. But it didn't faze Jack. I thought he was so good getting the double play to end that inning, then just a bunch of strikeouts. You know a pitcher's good when he's getting the bulk of his strikeouts towards the end of his time, and Jack continues to do that.
Our guest is Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin. We'll have more on Commodore Hour in just a moment. The Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. We visit with Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbin. Vanderbilt and Eastern Kentucky tomorrow night, then 3 against Tennessee Friday, Saturday, and Sunday over in Knoxville. Tim, I thought it was good to see Enrique get a couple of hits on Saturday and start to get on base again after a tough little stretch last week at the plate.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it was, I think his week was, you know, it was a tough one for him. I mean, but, you know, that's to be expected. I mean, he's not going to be able to roll through this league continually. No one ever does. And I think for him, any time that you don't have any type of success, you got to go back and kind of look at the film and see how you were pitched, see how you were exploited, see what you did personally, if you left the zone, the attack of the pitching coach and the pitcher on you. And I think those are the things that you gain from things like this. So if you don't use these games, it's one thing to lose them, but it's another thing to, if you lose them, don't lose what you gain from them. And I think that's the part that he can look at and say, okay, once I start going forward and reset myself, these are the things I'm going to look for. But I thought he got a hit on Saturday and got a bunt down and certainly is certainly capable. So I'm happy what he's going to learn and what he's going to do moving forward.
Do you find that, okay, you get about 4 weeks or so into conference play, that you do start to see patterns in terms of how people are pitching certain players or, you know, trying to exploit weaknesses and that sort of thing and turn the tables to do it the other direction too?
There's no doubt about it, and you have to. I mean, the pitching coaches in this league, they get paid to break down hitters, and they essentially are pushing buttons. Now, when they push the buttons, it doesn't mean that the other guy is going to be able to execute it. You need someone who can do that. And high-end executors that pitch to what the pitching coach is calling usually have a lot of success. And case in point would be Cannon on Saturday. I thought he did a very good job of mixing pitches and landing his breaking ball when he needed to and the areas of the plate that he was landing it to. It's one thing to throw a breaking ball over the plate, but breaking balls over the plate get crushed. Breaking balls that go to the edges of the plate and make the hitter choose whether or not to make a run at it or not, or swing through it, those are the ones that are tough. And Cannon had enough of velocity, obviously. He was 94, 96 miles an hour, which I can't believe how consistently we're talking about those numbers, those velocity numbers, because Kevin, when I started here at Vanderbilt, that stuff wasn't normal. The other 94, 96 guy, you saw maybe two of those guys through the year. Now you're seeing guys that can do that. I'm not going to say routinely because it's not, but you're seeing a lot of them. You're seeing guys that they can do it. And when they throw with that type of velocity, then that type of breaking ball, that makes it very difficult on your hitters.
You know, what do you attribute that to? Because I've noticed that over the years, too, even, you know, say at college level or in the big leagues, you see so many more guys that throw really, really hard. Is it, you know, pitchers starting younger, or what do you see there?
I think, well, a couple things. I think pitchers are throwing harder because they're throwing harder. You know, they're throwing harder in training. You know, they're developing their arm. They're moving their arm at a rapid speed. And I think also with Driveline and some of these other companies, the apparatus that these pitchers are using and understanding spin rates and what spin rates do, they're trying to produce that. And with it, though, I mean, there is another side to it. You know, you get these velocities that are high velocities, but you see more kids breaking down, too, because it's a lot of torque on the arm. And we just talked about the two guys in Jaden Hill at LSU and then Sam Loboke. Now, Jaden's was an arm injury that's going to cost him a year. Sam's, we don't know yet. But, you know, it didn't look good. And you know that in doing that, that's kind of the repercussions you get from throwing that way. It doesn't happen to everyone, but I would say right now, if you're a pitcher, you look at the ones we've had in our program, like whether it's Sonny Gray or whether it's Mikey Minor, whether it's David Price, Walker Buehler, you know, they've all had arm issues. So I just think it's kind of, it goes with the job. It's part of what happens. You know, it's almost like a football player. You know, you're going to get dinged up, and those guys use their arm, and it's a precious thing because they got to take care of it, but same time, there's a lot asked of it as well.
I always think positioning fielders is really interesting, and it kind of goes in hand with what you're talking about a minute ago with the way you pitch hitters. How do you go about combining the charts you have on the hitters along with how you want to pitch them and have those things work together, hopefully?
Yeah, timing's everything. I mean, we're on this call, and I'm right in front of my computer screen right now. That's what I was working on prior to getting on the phone with you, is I've got all this information on one side of my screen, then I've got my scouting report on the left side of my screen, and it's just looking at tendencies and looking at spray charts over and over and over and seeing where they're hitting. And, you know, they differ because if for instance, if I'm looking at a hitter right here, I can look at a hitter and then the ball's put in play, whether it's on the ground or whether it's in the air, then you can break it down to another option of, okay, off of right-handed pitchers, where does he hit the ball? Off of left-handed pitchers, where does he hit the ball? And I think then you go to velocities, then you go to spin. So there's a lot of guesstimates that you're making, and nothing's ever perfect. But I think what you want to do is you just want to align your defense in the most predictable spots on the field or the highest percentage spots on the field. And that's really what we try to do. And I do that part of it. Brandon Barrick does a scouting report, and he puts it all in a big file for me. So 2 days before the opponent, I can look at it. And then I go to the computer myself and look at video and look at the report and try to come up with a defensive plan. So that's just part of the process of pre-scouting and getting ready to play an opponent.
You know, both teams this weekend used the shift. It seemed like on almost every hitter. Is that a case where guys learning to play different infield position helps, especially for those middle infielders when they're moving around to different spots and making throws from different angles?
It is depth and left side, right side, because when you know, other than the first baseman, you're playing second baseman, shortstops, and third baseman in a lot of different crevices on the field. You know, you got Jason Gonzalez playing a lot of shortstop because he shifts into that position. You got Parker Nolan that's played some third base, goes to second base, he's playing right field. You got Carter Young flipping from shortstop over to the other side of the field, and what you got with a first baseman too. And I'll go back to Mark Teixeira because I was able to coach him in 2000 on the USA team, and he was a third baseman at Georgia Tech. But what I thought changed the game in some way, the Chip Kelly effect in football with offenses, I thought Mark Teixeira had that effect on defenses, because very early in his career, when he got over with, or later in the career, when he got with the Yankees, he positioned himself in the middle of the field between first and second base. And what it enabled Cano to do is move up the middle and give them more room on the left side with Jeter to field those balls off of right-handed hitters. And so now what you're asking your first baseman to do is play further away from the bag, but at a shallower distance, because you've got to get to the bag if a ball's hit. Mm-hmm. But you're asking him to be quite nimble. And a guy that can't move, then you can't shift as much. But if he can shift, then it allows your second baseman to play further into the middle of the field. And I always thought that Teixeira had a big effect on first baseman because he was the one first baseman that you saw that did it and was really good at it.
Our guest is Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin. This week's opponents, Eastern Kentucky and Tennessee. A thought or two on those two teams we'll see this week.
Well, Eastern Kentucky is very fast. I mean, they've got some kids that we recruited, Cam Ridley being one of them, and he's a very good player. But their offense has got a lot of power. They've got guys with 7, 6, and 5 home runs. And then if you look at their stolen base numbers, well, Ridley is a very good stolen base guy. And then a kid named Daniel Harris, second baseman, who's their 3-hole hitter, can run too. So, you know, they've beaten Georgia Tech. They've beaten Louisville. And just one of those teams that presents a different set of issues. But I think the biggest thing for Vanderbilt is really concentrating on Vanderbilt. I think coming into this game right here, we want to see how we respond coming off of a weekend that wasn't favorable for us.
And then, of course, Tennessee this weekend. That ballpark over in Knoxville, it's pretty cozy, isn't it, with dimensions about maybe 10 feet shorter all the way around than they are at our place.
It is. I think it just depends on the mountain air, how the ball is moving, because there's times where you've gone in there and ball doesn't move as well as what you would think. And there's a lot of space in the middle of the field now. You hit the ball in the middle of the field, it's kind of like Oklahoma State. You had the alleys were a little bit shallow. But if you hit the ball in the middle of the field, it wasn't going anywhere. So I think you have that effect in Knoxville, too. But Tony's done a nice job with his team. He's a very good coach. I say coach because he can recruit. There's no doubt about that. But he's done a nice job of coaching, too. He's the son of a coach and certainly is very astute. And the thing I tell you about Tony Vitello is everywhere he's been, once he's left it, you look at what those teams have done. Every single team has gone to Omaha and been there for a while, and it's his work. It's his work at Missouri, Texas Christian, and then Arkansas. And now he's got his own team, and he's doing quite well with it.
Tim, thanks as always. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay. Thank you, too, Kevin. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you later. Vanderbilt coach Tim Corbin joining us here on Commodore Hour. And as we mentioned, it'll be tomorrow night, 6:30 against Eastern Kentucky. We'll have the pregame for you coming up at 6:15, then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Tennessee. And certainly our thoughts are with everybody over in Knoxville with the tragic events over at Austin East High School today, and certainly thinking about everybody over there. When we come back, we'll have my conversation. I've recorded earlier with Barton Simmons, guy I've known a long time. He is part of the Vanderbilt football program, and as you'll hear from him, he's just thrilled to be there. He's the general manager and personnel director, and I can't think of anybody better to be in that role than Barton because of his background and scouting and following recruiting and all those things. So a really good conversation, Barton Simmons. That is coming up next here on Commodore Hour, brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery, the Tennessee Education Lottery, proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. We're coming right back. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. It is terrific to have you with us on this Monday evening. I'm Kevin Ingram. Well, coming up this weekend on Saturday, we'll have the spring football game over at Vanderbilt Stadium. It'll be at 11 o'clock. Gates open at 10:30. First come, first serve. Practices coming up on Wednesday and Friday to finish up the spring practice sessions, and then the spring game coming up on Saturday. So hope you'll head over to Vanderbilt Stadium and watch some football on Saturday as Clark Lee finishes up his first spring as head coach of the Commodores. Had a chance earlier to visit with Barton Simmons. He is the general manager and personnel director for Vanderbilt football. Great conversation. Here is Barton. Barton, I guess, first of all, how much are you enjoying your new role after a lot of years in scouting as a recruiting analyst? What do you like about your position at Vanderbilt?
I love it, Kevin. I've been on your side of the table most of my career, and I've enjoyed that too. But I feel very invigorated kind of being in the mix here on this side. It's you know, I've talked about this all in theory. Now I get to sort of work through it in practice, and that's exciting. And look, it's just been fun to be a part of a team, especially a team that's in this building that's as positive and collaborative and energetic as this group is. And it's been just so much fun to be around this group, led by the head man who's put it all together. And then, you know, just being able to interact with these players in a way that is pretty meaningful, just in terms of just sort of where they are at in their journey and sort of the role that Vanderbilt plays in it. It's I mean, look, to this point, it's been kind of a dream job. So hopefully we can do it well enough to hang on to it for a while.
Yeah, as far as the on-field work, there's no substitute for experience at quarterback. How have Ken Seals and Mike Wright and the others progressed through the spring practices?
You know, they've been great. And I think as much as anything, you know, all we can ask for right now is that these guys sort of buy into the culture over here. And they've done that. And those guys have led the way. And those guys have been super competitive. You know, they've each had their fair share of good moments, and certainly, you know, they're going through some growing pains of learning the new system as well. But I feel pretty confident that we're going to be able to trot a quarterback out there that's going to be able to, you know, produce at the level we need them to win in this conference. And so, you know, that's been encouraging. But again, more than anything, it's, I just think we have really good people in that position. Those guys are all competitive. Those guys are like, they're all guys that we can put in front of a recruit and feel great about the way they're going to present themselves and present this program. And so it's just, I think we're fortunate in that regard to step into a situation where we got really good people at the quarterback position.
I thought the parts were there last year for the offense to be successful, you know, especially at the skill positions. And if you have a more healthy and complete offensive line, you know, it could certainly take a step forward. What are you seeing in that regard?
Yeah, I tell you, get around Coach Blazek, our offensive line coach, and it's not going to take you long to sort of have a belief that group is in good hands. They've had days where they've been really the best unit on the field, frankly. And the defense has won their fair share as well. But I feel good about the depth in that group. Feel good about the way that group's coming together as a unit. Some of the guys that got some experience last year are continuing to take steps forward. I think collectively we got numbers there. We've got a mindset that is continuing to get on the same page and aligned with their position coach. And I feel good about the progress being made at offensive line.
Over on the defensive side, who stood out during the spring practices?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've had I think you start with the secondary. Jalen Mahoney's had a good spring. Mm-hmm. You know, Ethan Barr is continuing to build on a strong freshman season. The defensive line has had several guys that have continued to step up. You know, I think that across the board, 1 through 22, like, you know, we've got some really good players. And look, and I think fortunately – we feel like we inherited some body types that are going to be fits for our system. And I think that Jesse Minter and Coach Lee and those guys will tweak things as needed to fit our personnel, which is going to be really important throughout this you know, the future of this program. And they'll do that. But I also think that, you know, we got a chance given the guys that are on this roster right now. And again, that's really encouraging.
You're a defensive player and a really good one. What are the biggest challenges to learning this particular system?
You know, I think anytime that there's a new system in place, it's as much about just adopting the culture of the leader of that unit is what you're kind of looking for. And, you know, one thing that I feel like has been really harped on by Coach Minter is just sort of attacking the football, taking shots on goal is what he calls it, you know, trying to find ways to create turnovers. And I'll be honest, like this is just watching from the sidelines. You know, we've giggled a couple times at just some of the blitzes and packages that are already in place and how difficult some of those are to translate on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they're throwing some stuff at these guys offensively, yeah. And that's kind of neat to see this happening that quickly. But ultimately, you know, with these guys, it's just about really kind of embracing the expectations in terms of the play-by-play efforts, you know, the way that we need them to finish, the way we need them to kind of buy into our practice style and things of that nature. And they've done that. But we're constantly working to sort of push that, and the coaches drive that, and that's been fun to see.
you know, for you, a guy who's, you know, so involved in personnel, and you have been for years, how challenging has it been to watch these workouts with no numbers on the players and just kind of having to know by their body types and how they run and all those sorts of things?
Yeah, it's taken, I mean, certainly for a roster that I only had sort of partial working knowledge of stepping in, I think, you know, numbers would have made the job a lot easier to figure out who's who quicker.
Yeah.
But in a way, maybe that challenge has been good to just, you know, learn that much more about these guys in terms of their play style, their body type, their movements. And so it really has been, you know, kind of forget what it's like to have numbers on these guys. Like I feel like when they finally get numbers on, we'll feel spoiled or something. to this point, like it's become very normal to just see the names and Vanderbilt on these jerseys. And it's, you know, what that represents is so important here. Just the idea that everything, you know, numbers and everything else in this program has to be earned. And it may even sound a little corny from the outside, but from the inside, it just feels right. Like it feels like the way it's supposed to be. And it's a great tone setter for this program because, you know, these guys are learning every day, you know, how much, you know, respect and appreciation matter in this place, and how much earning it every day is going to be a foundational piece of this program. And so it's been welcomed on our end.
Visiting with Barton Simmons, Vanderbilt football general manager and director of personnel. How have you seen scouting players change, especially in the last year when everything's been done so much virtually?
Yeah, it's been a challenge because there's just, you know, obviously, I mean, for the obvious reasons, but we're in a, man, if this situation had popped up maybe 10 years ago, we'd be in a whole different mess than we're in now. But right now and 15 years ago, more so. But every year, more and more is available online, you know, you can find videos, you can find numbers, you have to lean into your sources. And so in a way, it's been like a really fun discovery mission just to try to make sure that you are as informed as possible on the guys that we're offering and the guys that we're getting committed. And it's been a fun challenge. And I think if we continue to be diligent about it, if we continue to put the effort into it that is needed, I feel like it's an opportunity for us to create some separation, for us to find an angle where maybe others don't. And look, everyone's efforting in the same way, but I feel good about sort of what our board looks like. I feel good about the guys that we've got committed to this point, and I feel good about sort of their profile and how that may relate to what the board would look like in a typical year. I think, you know, right now we're excited about the information we've got on the guys we're recruiting.
Real quick on the spring game on Saturday, have you guys decided on a format for that yet?
That's a Coach Lee question, I think. You know, he's got it'll be offense, defense. I think it'll be fairly traditional, but the nuts and bolts of that are going to be, you know, Coach Lee will work through that with all of us, I think, later this week. It's really been sort of a day-to-day process here in terms of staying focused on what's to come, and Coach Lee has paid the big bucks to
right.
Hunker down in his head man office and work through all that stuff. But it's going to be a fun day, and it's so exciting to get out there. I know people were able to come out to the practice on Friday night, and some did, and which was awesome. But we're really excited to get in front of the fans and just show everybody what we've been working on.
And Martin, one more for you. How exciting is the Vandy United program, especially what you consider is in store for football in the coming years?
It's awesome. I mean, and this university has so much potential. I mean, I've been sitting here in this town for the last almost 40 years. Scary to say, but it's always had that kind of potential, and it's needed someone to get behind it and really catapult it forward. And we've got that with Chancellor Dearmeyer right now. We've got that with Candace Lee, and we've got that with Coach Lee. The alignment, the energy, the optimism, again, the people in this building, it's, man, what an exciting time to be a part of Vanderbilt football. I feel incredibly just blessed to have sort of this opportunity to have arisen for me at a time when it has for Vanderbilt football, because I feel like I'm just part of a tidal wave right now and I'm just going to ride it and enjoy it, because this has been such great opportunity across the board, and to see the kind of people be engaged outside and want to be involved, from alumni to supporters to Vanderbilt football players that have moved on, them getting back around the program and the energy and excitement we have from them as well. Like, it's just, you kind of got to pinch yourself, sure, that this is the opportunity that we're sitting here in. So we got to work hard and like I said, earn it every day and make sure that we're making the most of it.
Well, Barton, so happy for you and proud for you to get this opportunity, and all the best. Thanks a lot for the time.
Of course. Thanks for talking, and appreciate the interest in Vanderbilt football.
That is Barton Simmons from Vanderbilt football, general manager and personnel director, a guy I've known for a while, and we've done some high school football games together, and great dude, and really terrific selection by Clark Lee, a guy who was his high school teammate at NBA back in the day. But coming up on Saturday, 11 a.m. at the stadium for the spring game to close out spring football. Gates open at 10:30, first come, first serve. When we come back, we're going to have Karen Greigel with us. She was a member of the first bowling championship team for Vanderbilt, with the new documentary coming up tonight on SEC Network at 8 o'clock. Karen will join us. We'll talk about that experience and what it was like being in on the ground floor of the program. So it's coming up next. This is Commodore Hour. We'll be right back. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Great to have you with us for Commodore Hour. I'm Kevin Ingram, and we're joined now by Karen Greigel, who is a 2009 Vanderbilt grad and a member of the first national championship bowling team for the Commodores. And coming up tonight on SEC Network at 8 o'clock, the SEC story program called Vandy Rolls is going to air. Looking forward to seeing that, as it tells the story of the program getting off the ground and winning that championship. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, did you get to go to like a red carpet premiere of the show or anything like that?
No. I'm actually sitting in my office right now.
What do you remember? You know, when you think back to that time, what do you remember most about the bowling program sort of getting off the ground and then leading up to winning that championship back in 2007?
Well, I mean, I think it's all just so surreal. You know, when we came in, you know, I was part of the first recruiting class. So, you know, we sort of just came in very young and ambitious and in many ways naive, which I think is what helped attribute to some of our successes, right? Because we just went for it every single time. You know, every time we hit the lanes, we were, you know, just fearless. And so it was really exciting coming in on the ground level. And, you know, there was, I think there were minimal expectations, to say the least. So when we started to take off and people started paying attention and realizing that we meant business and we were out to win at the highest level possible, it was really exciting time.
How much had you bowled before you were one of the first recruits for John Williamson's program?
I had been bowling since I was 5 years old. It's kind of a funny story. So, you know, when you're a 5 year old, your parents sort of put you in all sorts of different sports and just to kind of see what sticks, right? And of course, the first league that I bowled as a youngling, my team happened to win first place, and it was this big purple trophy. And I at the time loved the color purple, and I was like, I get to take home the big one. Like, okay, this is great. I like this. And so, then, you know, fast forward years later, I was fortunate enough to bowl in a high school bowling program at Brick Township High School here in New Jersey, and our team just happened to have a really great legacy of great bowlers, and we were state champions 3 out of the 4 years I was there. And it was just, you know, there was something in the water in Brick Township. There's been 3 of us that all from Brick Township and one from Brick Memorial High School that all were on national championship winning teams. So myself in 07 on Vanderbilt's team, Jessica Worsley, now Jessica Bond, in 08 on University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and Tracy Ganjoin from Fairleigh Dickinson University in 2010. So it's pretty cool you know, to have that legacy in my hometown.
How has John Williamson been the right leader for that program, which has since, you know, had a lot more success, including another national championship?
I think, you know, from the beginning, John was determined to make it a program that mirrored the same principles and work ethic and quality of competition and play that, you know, that mirrored the baseball program. And Coach Corbin, you know, John had come over from that program, and, you know, I think from the very beginning, you know, he knew how he wanted to build the program and did so in a manner that, you know, was conducive to success. And he was determined to get us every resource possible and learn the sport, you know, from scratch, and was humble in doing so. So, you know, from the very beginning, you know, he knew what his goals were, and we shared those goals, and it made all the difference.
When Josie recorded those strikes in the 10th frame for the championship, was it almost surreal at that point to think about what had been achieved?
I think it's still surreal, to be honest. here we are over a decade later, and, you know, I just, even watching the trailers for this documentary that's about to air this evening is just surreal. You know, I don't know if it ever really sinks in. I'm still waiting for it to sink in.
Now, you also became the first coach of Monmouth Bowling. What's it been like to get your own program up and running?
Oh, it's been amazing and a dream come true. You know, I, when I first started here, I remember calling John and being like, I got it. You know, he was one of the first phone calls I made, and had been very supportive and instrumental in my interviewing process and application process, and as well as Brian Reese. They both were, I mean, huge supporters in me applying for this position. And even throughout the last 10 years that I've been here, you know, I still am in contact with them constantly, you know, just for advice. And, you know, it's really been a thrill. A few years ago, we had a 4-lane center donated by a Monmouth alumni who's very, very prominent in the bowling world, the Sinello family. And now I'm actually sitting here in my office staring out into our 4-lane facility. And after coaching here for 10 years, it really has been an amazing experience. And I'm working hard to try and get my program to the national championship with John in the near future. And hopefully we'll be versing each other one day on TV. That's the goal.
There you go. Karen Greigel is our guest, a 2009 Vanderbilt graduate and a member of the first national championship bowling team back in 2007. All right, to finish up, I have a technical question for you. Now I saw the young man get the 7-10 split over the weekend. Is that something you can practice at all to try to hit it just right to make that happen? I mean, how do you go about that?
I mean, there's a lot of factors that have to go right for that to happen, right? So you have to get the right angle, the right speed, the right axis tilt and rotation on your ball, just to kind of hit that pin in just the right way to get it to bounce just the right way. So I would, and obviously some luck, right? So I would say, I don't know if it's something you can certainly attempt at practicing, but probably something that's very rare, maybe once in a lifetime achievement.
No, you're... You're also a member of the Black and Gold Club. What do you like about that group? A member of the board for the Black and Gold Club, I should say. What do you like about that group and just staying connected to the school and other former athletes?
Oh, I can't say enough amazing things about that group. Just first of all, you have just a span of experience there alone, you know, from all the different programs. And I think what I love most is that, you know, we all share that passion for Vanderbilt athletics and that desire to stay connected with each other, with the institution, and sort of bridge that gap between, you know, old Commodores and new Commodores and future Commodores, right? And just connect that community or reconnect that community. And, you know, between the Vandy United initiative, it's just amazing to see, you know, what has happened and how the campus and the athletics department has evolved over the years. And it's so exciting to have Candace leading the charge now. I remember as a student athlete, you know, seeing her in the hallways and talking with her and her coming to the bowling center to support us. So, you know, it's being a part of that initiative has been such an honor. And working with that group has been such an honor because there's just so much experience and passion there. And I look forward to all the future initiatives that we will be starting and hopefully continuing for the years to come.
Karen, thanks so much for the time. Congratulations on your success and looking forward to seeing the documentary tonight.
Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Okay, you too. That is Karen Greigel, 2009 Vanderbilt grad, member of the first national championship team. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap things up in a moment on Commodore Hour, the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. It's been great to have you with us this evening. Thanks, of course, to our producer, Steve Goldberg. Always a terrific job. And thanks to our guest as well, baseball coach Tim Corbin, for the first couple segments. Barton Simmons from Vanderbilt football and former Vanderbilt bowler and 2007 national champion Karen Greigel. Be sure to be with us. Vanderbilt baseball tomorrow night against Eastern Kentucky, pregame at 6:15, and the spring game coming up on Saturday at Vanderbilt Stadium at 11 o'clock. I'm Kevin Ingram saying goodnight from Nashville. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.